Alrighty, hello there, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all kinds of good stuff. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night between Christmas and New Year's. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Of course, Bill Newell helping out as he always does, and we are back. And Coach, this is actually, I watched something on PBS the other night about the 12 Tudor days of Christmas that that Henry VIII developed. And that was pretty interesting because here in the United States, we start the Christmas season, I don't know what, around mid-October, and then it ends.
How about sometime right after the 4th of July?
Yeah, and then it ends on the 25th of December. But in most civilized countries, Christmas begins on December 25. So this would be the fourth day of the Christmas celebration. And what was really interesting was that in Henry's day, everybody worked right through Christmas Eve. They worked and worked and worked and worked. But beginning on Christmas morning, it was 12 days of celebration.
Yeah, so obviously Mr. Scrooge was a violator of the legal traditions, unless by that point in time in England, Henry's 12-day celebration has sort of gone by the board.
Yeah. Well, I know somebody calculated Bob Cratchit's wages, and I guess translated to today's dollar, he'd be making about $27,000 a year. But that was calculated on 40 hours. And anyway, do we have any idea in A Christmas Carol how many hours a week that Cratchit worked?
No, but it's funny. I actually looked at the clock a little bit closer. He didn't start till 9, but he worked till 7.
Okay. Well, that's.
And
that's...
I don't think he had a lunch break, it seemed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's 10 hours, and, yeah. Yeah, he put in a pretty good day's work, I guess.
But he was working 10-hour days.
Okay.
More than likely 6-7 days a week.
Yeah.
He was working between 60 and 70 hours a week.
Hmm. All right. Well, anyway, he'd still be above the minimum wage. Today.
Yeah, but he was below the poverty line.
Yeah, well, so many are. Anyway, we are between Christmas and New Year's, and your Christmas went well, I presume?
Yes, it went very nice. You know, the older you get, the more things you don't need. So the more you struggle to figure out what it is you might like for Christmas. Because during the year, you actually buy the things that you need.
Sure.
You know, rather than waiting for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I bought most of my own gifts this year. I just told her. I said, I don't know what I want. But then as I started to spot some things, like I've got a couple of things for the truck, you know, and a couple of astronomy pieces. I got this really cool 2x54 wide-angle binocular.
You got to help me set up my telescope again. My motor, the go-to, I think, is dead, but I still should be able to use it manually, shouldn't I?
I would think so. Yeah.
I would think
so. And then I bought a monocle, a 10x42 monocle, and I just bought a unipod for it that actually has a tripod base.
Cool.
I'm waiting for that to come in on Tuesday.
So, did you see the conjunction?
It was cloudy where I am, and we were occurring. It was low on the horizon, and it was hidden by a group of trees. The next night when it cleared up, I could see them as they were beginning to split apart.
Right, it was very
cool. Yep. It was difficult seeing them through the trees.
And you could see the Galilean satellites quite clearly around Jupiter, too. It's pretty amazing, you know, that you can see those so easily. And I implore anybody who has a pair of binoculars, take a look at Saturn. I don't know if you can still see it. It's setting so early now, but Saturn and Jupiter have been just spectacular all fall. It's just been amazing. And Mars now is high in the sky, so you can always take a peek at Mars.
Yeah, that's the bright star. For those you don't know, that's the bright star above the moon.
Right now. Yep.
That's Mars, yep.
Yep, and anyway, all those lessons being done, we will be talking with the Gloucester High School girls basketball coach, Sean Goulart, good friend of coaches and mine. We'll also be checking in with Gary Larrabee, Mike Grenier. I've got some other calls out, but as you might expect, a little tough getting people right now this particular time for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the ongoing state of emergency. And as everybody knows, what was it, back on Saturday, we had to go back to, they pulled back phase three, so even more restrictions out there. So it's tough getting a hold of people right now, and schools are practicing. St. Mary's off to a great start in hockey. They beat Bishop Fenwick, I think it was 2 days ago, 10-1.
Yeah.
And so they're already playing hockey, and the kids are practicing, and we'll see where it goes. We're going to find out as we talk with Coach Goulart in just a little while. But tough getting a hold of people. I've tried to get a hold of some coaches, Tim, and we are directed to go through the directors of athletics, and of course they're very busy right now. So things ain't what they used to be.
Oh no, certainly not, and they're not going to be that way again for some time. You know, again, the medical community, Dr. Fauci et al., is, you know, they're warning of a surge on top of the current surge because of the number of people that traveled throughout the country during the holiday season, both Christmas, Thanksgiving. We've seen the impact of that. And now Christmas, you know, 5 million people went through America's airport just prior to Christmas. So we know we're going to see another surge based upon the history. So it's not going away soon. The, you know, the vaccines are out there, but not very many people have, a small percentage of the country has actually gotten the vaccine. I know my wife is scheduled to get it, Thursday at, Shriners Hospital in Boston. So, and it's going to be a long time before just the majority of the country is vaccinated. And so you've got a long time for this thing to multiply and another, you know, you look at the numbers, you know, 124,000 cases today, over 1,300 people dead today, just today. That's an unfathomable number of people to lose to one cause. It's the number one killer of Americans right now. You know, so and people sit back and be smart, please.
Yeah. Well, at least the vaccinations have begun, and that's a positive thing.
It is, but it's not the panacea. Because people are getting shots doesn't mean it's over.
Nope. I want to point out that we have the Salem News Writers Weekly Podcast, their sports writers, on this post as well. Bill Newell hosting the Salem News sports writers every week, usually posted on the Salem News and on our website on Saturday, but we've absconded it and put it on our page right here on our post with North Shore Sports Night, because the Salem News is talking about some of their best teams ever, and in this edition they're talking about the all-decade team, so kind of fun. Check that out with Phil Stacey and Nick Giannino, Matt Williams, and Nick Kukuru, and of course posting it is Bill Newell. That's right below the media player right here that you're listening to this program with at the moment. Boy, that's an English sentence and a half. Coach, what catches your eye in terms of sports? I tried to watch some. I really didn't watch a lot of football yesterday. I got to tell you, one game, Tim. I was watching Miami and Las Vegas. Vegas has the ball. I think they're up by a point or down by 2 points or something like that with a minute to go. They get down, they get inside the 5 yard line with a first and goal, and they keep falling down. They don't go into the end zone. They keep falling down to milk the clock. And I'm thinking, you know what? If you go into the end zone and you get a 2 point conversion, you're up by 7. No matter how much time is left, you're up by 7. Whereas if you just kick a field goal, you're only up by, I think it was 1 at that point or whatever it was, allowing Miami, whatever, however many seconds you have left, to get within field goal range. Now, which is easier, getting within field goal range or having to go all the way into the end zone? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm just a novice. I don't know a hell of a lot about football. But why the hell don't they go for the 7 points or 8 points for that matter? So 25 seconds left. Vegas scores. They go out on top by a point or two. I don't remember what it was. I go to bed. I turned it off. I said, okay, well, Vegas has got this one. What do I know? And I woke up the next morning, and Miami won the game with 27 seconds left. They went down and kicked a field goal.
All right. I had the opposite experience. I turned it on just as Miami was getting the ball back, and they trot out who's he was? He's a bearded wonder from Harvard. His name suddenly escapes me. And they bench Tua, and they bring out, oh God, what's the kid from Harvard say? He always beats the Patriots.
Fitzpatrick?
Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
He leads him down the field to kick the field goal and win. But the play that set him up, and the announcer just said, well, let's see, the 38-yard line is where they're going to go to be able to kick a field goal. He goes back to pass. Defensive lineman nearly tears his head off, grabbing his face mask. He's got a wide receiver who's become open down the left side. He goes to throw it. The guy yanks his face mask. While his head is turned totally to the left, he throws a dying quail to the guy who's still wide open, and they get in field goal range.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, it's just, I just don't understand. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm not a coach. I don't, you know, and Coach Ingram, man, every time I listen to Coach Ingram or any of these high school coaches, I learn something. But I was just like, why would you do that? You know, I'm talking about Gruden on the other side. Why the hell, inside of a minute, get the damn 6, 7, or 8 points? What is wrong with you? And, nope, you don't want them to have the, it's like, okay, so one pass and you're within field goal range. That's what happened, right?
Yeah.
One pass.
And it was the most improbable of passes.
Right.
If Fitzpatrick goes down as having made one of the flukiest passes of all time.
Remember when Miami beat them, was it last year or the year, beat the Patriots last year or the year before with no time left? 7 seconds on a kickoff, and they scored the touchdown. Gronk couldn't stop it or whatever. You know, it's just like, get the stinking points. I don't understand that. Anyway, I asked you what caught your eye, so let's get back to that.
Oh, God. Just the ability of a lot of NFL teams to hold on to sizable leads. The way they fade in the second half, I think the Chargers had a lead yesterday, you know, and it's like, oh, God, it's just not good football.
Well.
It's not good football, and it's like, can't watch a whole lot of it.
Celtics.
I'm going to be able to watch tonight.
Celtics having that problem too, and we'll talk later on with Mike Grenier about that. The Celtics, it's interesting. The Celtics are one shot away from being 2-1, but they're also one shot away from being 0-3. So, not a terrific start for the boys in green. And we'll also talk with Mike, I'm sure, about the late great KC Jones, one of the all-time basketball icons, winningest icons that graced the sports scene here in Boston. And I hope Mike's got a story or two on that. We'll check in with Gary Larrabee as well, see what's happening in the world of golf and other thoughts. Well, Coach, let's take a break, and then we'll see if we can come back with Goulart.
We can do that.
Let's do it. Let's see what happens here. I'm going to hit this button, and we'll be back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, we're back now, and we have Sean Goulart back on the phone here on MSO News Sports on North Shore Sports Night as Coach Goulart, the girls basketball coach of varsity level at Gloucester High School. Coach, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I guess the big question is, if I can hear you here, big question is, how are things going with the team?
So, unique year, to say the least. We are very fortunate that we had a little bit of a late start, but we are certainly up and running, and that is more than we can say for most schools in our division right now.
Tim?
Talk a little bit about the makeup of the team. It was a really tough first year for you last year. Who are some of your leaders? And I guess what become the expectations for this year's team?
So last year we had 12 players on the roster. We graduated four of them. It was a difficult year if you look at the record and the scores, but there was a lot of growth throughout the season. We did go 1-19, but we did graduate four. We have a very young program right now. We just brought 10 freshmen into the program, and we're trying to keep the freshmen together. We did pull one up, but basically right now we have a roster of 10 at both levels. So we have a varsity 10 and we have a JV 10. And it was definitely affected by COVID, the understandable concern by many players to sit out this season due to the virus. But we have a very lean program right now, but we have some young talent. And the ones that are returning are, I'm very happy with how much they recall from last year with the foundation, the program that we put in place, because last year was my first year. We have put a new program in place. We are building off what we did last year. We finished the season with our one and only win. And we're looking to kind of keep that momentum going as we start this season.
What makes up the rest of your coaching staff, Sean?
The whole coaching staff is back. So I'm still at the varsity level. I have Bill Melvin, who's my junior varsity and assistant varsity coach. And I have Jess Borway as well. So we have the exact same coaching staff coming back, which is fantastic for continuity purposes because they bought in, they understand what the program is from last year, and there's a continuity going into this season as well. So we're super happy to have everybody back. But it is a unique year. It's hard to deny that.
What are some of the changes? Like, for example, in hockey, you can't do what is called a scrum along the boards anymore. If the puck is along the boards, one player from each team, that's it. No one else can join in, or you get a penalty. And I don't know what other changes. I guess there's something to do with the face-offs and so on. Are there any similar changes in basketball, Sean?
Well, I'll start by saying, if you asked me 2 months ago, I would have laughed at you if you said we're going to have a season because it's just so hard to pull off. The MIAA got together, did a great job putting together not only a basketball season, but one that is, it looks like basketball. There are no jump ball, there's no tip-off at the beginning of the game. There's no inbounding under the hoop. And then with the free throws, there are modifications if it's two free throws, all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, that's pretty much it. There are little nuances, but we can still press. You can still play man defense. You can play zone defense. The MIAA wanted to do the best they could to keep everybody safe without really kind of hurting the validity of the sport. So my hat goes off to everybody that was a part of it because they really did a really nice job at balancing safety and kind of maintaining the sport as is.
So will all the inbounding be done along the sidelines? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, any inbounding that would be done under the hoop would be on the free throw extended. So it'll be on the sideline.
Oh, okay, free throw line extended.
Which is it's a modification, right? It's something we have to take into account when we do our X's and O's and we prep them. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a pretty minor thing considering we're trying to get a season in during a pandemic. So, you know, it is what it is.
How many games will you play this fall?
Well, we'd like to play all of them.
What number is scheduled?
So right now, we're supposed to open with Salem. Salem right now is a question mark. I think there are six or seven teams that are question marks right now. A lot of schools have really looked at kind of holding off, seeing what the numbers are after the holiday and making decisions. I want to say there are four schools, us included, that are right now practicing and preparing for the season. We all got started late. We would usually start the Monday after Thanksgiving. We started about a week or two after that, and now I think there's four schools as of right now that are in session, and we're waiting to find out what the rest of the schools are going to do. But it's very reactionary right now. But
what a
so you have a set schedule with a fully scheduled. But that'll be determined, again, once after the first of the year and teams decide whether to opt in or opt out.
Yeah, so as of right now, both the Lins are out. That's the last I knew. That was the only official we are out. I know they're trying to challenge it, but I know they are basically out as of right now. Brian LaFada, our athletic director, and again, hat goes off to him and all the athletic directors. Brian says, we're going to do everything we can to put together a puzzle piece, a schedule for you. So, yes, we're supposed to start with Salem. Salem at residence right now is a question mark, so we may start with Winthrop. And it's basically whatever schools are available The ADs will work together to try to puzzle piece a schedule for us together and then give us as the coaches as much notice as possible for preparation purposes. But at the end of the day, the athletic director will work. And I can't be more proud of the work that everybody's done to try to make this happen. Because I can't stress enough how important sports are for all students in a good year, especially during a pandemic in the middle of the winter. So everyone's doing their best to maintain the safety, but also get these kids active, which is fantastic.
I got to ask you a question. I don't know that you would even, if I'm asking you, is the right person to ask. But with the curtailed schedule in the fall, I'm guessing that, I know in hockey, for example, there are going to be fewer venues. But with a curtailed schedule, if you only play, let's say, 10 games, you're not going to be traveling that much, so expenses are going to be down. Obviously, you're not going to be able to have fans in, I presume. I don't know what the parents have been told. Is there any discount on the user fees?
That's an excellent question. I do not know anything about discounts outside of the discounts that they have for certain students, you know, for certain needs.
Right.
I don't know that. What I do know is that we are, the user fees, we definitely have less players in our program this year than we would, and I've talked to a lot of coaches, and that's across the board. I don't know what school by school are doing. I think Gloucester, we have the same user fees, but we're also going to give them, you know, 2 months of basketball. So I don't know about the user fees, but I do know that everyone's doing their best. And the other thing, too, is that there are expenses that come with pandemic basketball, for lack of better term, because you have to have so much spacing on the buses. You have to have more buses. So there are a lot of things. And then the other thing, too, is, like you said, attendance is going to be down. I know at Gloucester we're not allowing any away fans to be in the building just for safety purposes. I know some buildings are not allowing any fans. I think it's school by school. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of revenue at the same time. So there's a lot of things to consider right now. But you're right. I don't have the answer.
Right.
I haven't heard anything.
And a question along the same lines, and I'll let Tim get back to it. You know, a lot of schools have live streaming ability now with cameras. Do you know if Gloucester has that?
We actually, we were doing things, I believe, on Facebook Live with our athletic director, Brian LaFada. He has been working to get, I wish I knew the name of it, some sort of live streaming camera to be hooked up in the field house. I believe he got the funding for it. I don't know when it's going to come in.
Great, yep.
I believe every school will have some form of live streaming, because they recognize, since we are limiting the attendance or the crowd size, people want to see their student-athletes compete. So I believe every school on some level will have it. I believe either we'll have a Facebook Live or something else that will be implemented. Yes, every school will have it, I guess, is the short answer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Wow, that's... We've covered a whole lot of areas here with you, Sean, and we didn't even prep you for it, but you've been right on with all your responses so far, and very gracious with your kudos to the administration, to Brian, who has done a great job since he has taken over the position as athletic director, in especially in dealing with the COVID amongst many sports. I guess one thing to do is wish you the best of luck as the season gets ready to tip off, and keep your players healthy, keep them running, keep them scoring.
Yeah, and thank you guys for having me on. I just want to say that I really do want to, I can't stress enough how fantastic everybody has been from the top down, not just in the athletics, but in the schools themselves, the principals, the superintendents, and honestly, the staff and the students. The students have been phenomenal. Because I'm a teacher as well, and the students have been phenomenal. They've been wearing their masks, been keeping each other safe. It really does make me feel good that while we're going through a trying time like this, that everyone, there's a very communal feeling in the building right now, and everyone's trying to keep each other safe and trying to maintain some sort of normalcy as we get out of this this historic time in our lives. So
good.
I just want to make that clear that everyone's been fantastic. It makes me feel good as a coach and a teacher.
Well, good job, Coach. We'll talk to you later on, so good luck in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, John.
All right. Take care. That is Gloucester High School girls basketball coach Sean Goulart. And coach, didn't you? You guys work in the same department together, didn't you? When you were at the high school?
Yeah, we were. He's in the history department.
Okay.
He was one of my student teachers. I'm very proud of what he's accomplished, both in and out of the classroom.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I know the user fee. I saw something recently about a parent up at Masconomet, and the parent calculated that in the 4 years that they've had, the parents have had their kid, I guess they've had two or three kids play sports and they're multi-sport athletes, that they have spent over $20,000 in user fees for...
I saw it, and I was totally, totally floored when I saw that dollar number. You know, it just really throws a burr in my saddle. You know, free and public education has sort of gone by the boards, and you know, it's such a sad thing is when we come down to it, we start tearing away programs. We get rid of art, we get rid of music, we get rid of the athletics, and you have to find a way to maintain those programs because they play a vital part in the lives of as many students who participate in any sport. The artistically inclined have to be taught. They have to be nurtured, just like a fullback, just like a quarterback, you know, the point guard, the center. You know, these guys go on and have stellar careers in their post-school days. They continue this as majors in college. There's probably more kids, again, going to college for arts than there are going to college for sports. And they just can't suffer the way they do during hard times.
Well, there's got to be a solution out there somewhere. And I feel bad for those kids who are not able to participate for whatever reason. And
exactly.
Hopefully it'll get better. I mean, this is what we do. This is we've been doing this for a long time. We're in the business of that as teachers. So, yeah.
Between the two of us, what did we do, 65 years?
Let me see.
Years,
I had 38 plus 2, so call it 40.
So 71 years between the two of us.
Oh, my God.
we've seen a thing or two. We've seen the changes.
I feel like J.K. Simmons. Yeah, we know a thing or two. We've seen a thing or two. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll come back with a couple of more guys who have seen some things or three. We'll go next with Gary Larrabee. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening. And so hang in there. We will be back.
I'm getting some water.
Okay.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with the great Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. And Gary, you just said something off the air here that cracked me up because 8 days before Christmas, we had 13 or 15 inches of snow here on Cape Ann. And just yesterday, today I'm out walking and I'm seeing green grass. So this is nuts.
It's New England winter weather at its finest, and I had the opportunity, guys, this morning to go visit my daughter and her family down in Scituate, and there was a lot of golf going on down there at Widow's Walk, a beautiful, very beautiful, relatively new public golf course in Scituate. I wish I had brought my clubs. I would have postponed my visit to my daughter's house until after I got at least a quick 9 holes, and if I'd been thinking rationally.
That's funny. So the courses weren't soaked because of the melt?
Well, you know, no, and it's walking, obviously. It's all walking conditions, but we forget about the South Shore and the Cape. For those crazy enough to play, I wouldn't have been that crazy enough to play today, but, you know, there is winter golf, and if the conditions are right, all the power to them. Most importantly, though, I'm trying to figure out what Tiger Woods and Charlie Woods were doing this past weekend, Christmas weekend.
Oh my goodness! Are there any pro golf? Well, they can't be this time of year, right? It's all college football and basketball.
Indeed, and of course we have to wait, I think, for the second weekend in January. No, I think it'll be the first weekend, the second weekend in January. January, I believe, 7th through 10th, the PGA Tour opens up in Hawaii for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Tournament of Champions, it's right around the corner, Tim, and then of course. The Sony Open at the other course they used in Hawaii, and we're getting close, Tim. We're getting close.
Yeah, before you know it, it's going to be the Masters again.
And there's nothing wrong with that, huh?
Boy, you guys, you know, come on, man. I haven't even gone up country skiing yet. I just looked at where I'm going this week, and they got maybe 25% open, and you guys are talking golf in the springtime. Jeepers, you're killing me.
Gary, no, you made a statement a moment ago. What is rational thinking? Quote-unquote, for a golfer?
Very good question, very good question. But no, you know, we're looking forward to a high school winter sports season, we hope, and we haven't heard anything to the contrary. So we're thinking about that. We're thinking about I'm thinking about our two outstanding college golfers, Chris Francoeur, who plays at URI down in Rhode Island, and Stephen Delizio, who's trying to wrap up his senior year competitively at that Duke University, and they're hoping to kick off seasons in January where they can get out south and play some Division One competitive golf. I'm wondering how those guys are doing right now. And, of course, I'm also wondering particularly how the winners of this past year's three major championships, how they're getting ready to try to see if they can win another major come 2021, which of course Tim is Colin Morikawa from California, who won the PGA. And then of course we've got Bryson DeChambeau, who is wondering who won the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. And then of course we have the winner of the Masters. I'm it's already escaping me. Who won the Masters? Jeez, Tim.
I know. You know, if you had mentioned that, probably could have come up with a name. You throw it out there.
Well, we're going to find out. So you guys talk. I can't remember either.
I'm drawing a blank. A very popular.
This is funny.
Runaway victory. It was a runaway too, wasn't it? A runaway? Or?
Was it? Yeah.
Oh, Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson. Of course. I'm sorry,
God.
Dustin Johnson. What, going away, and I'm looking forward to seeing how those guys can follow that up in 2021, along with whether Tiger still has another major in his tank and whether Brooks Koepka can bounce back after having what for him would be a lousy year, because everyone thought he would win at least one major in 2020. Did not happen. Then, of course, we've got to start thinking about the ladies' pro circuit. They'll be starting up, I think, the end of January. And, of course, before you know it, guys, we'll be thinking about the local golf scene. And I'm thinking about also, guys, about the fact that in 2021 it's going to be quite a historic year looking back, because it'll be 20 years ago when we had the most important, the most significant sporting event in the history of the North Shore happen right here in our neck of the woods. 20 years ago, Tim, in 2021.
2001.
Tim?
Well, it had to be the Senior Open at Salem.
That a boy. I can see you're weaning yourself off those painkillers very well. Very good job.
How did you know? Jeez. Oh, insight, man. It's everything. But yeah, you talk about history, Gary, and I was just thinking that if you look back on this year as a sports writer, as a historian, or just as a fan, you look at baseball, Major League Baseball, and in my opinion, it was a bust. It was a complete bust. A terrible schedule, terrible competition. Football, okay, not too bad. Golf, how would you assess that? Aside from the fact that there were no people in the stands, it didn't seem to me like the level of play suffered at all.
It did not, and of course there was some outstanding competition. Although, you know, DeChambeau won the U.S. Open in convincing fashion, as did Johnson with the Masters. I think the closest competition among the three majors was the PGA out in California. At Harding Park, won by this relative newcomer, Morikawa. But the competition was fantastic. Very few, if any, galleries. No galleries, really.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy was the missing factor in 2020 in all
right.
The major sports. Boy, do we miss having fans in those stands to cheer on their local heroes and to boo the bums.
I didn't realize how much that as a fan watching television, I enjoyed the fans at the games. I didn't realize that till they're not there anymore.
Oh, the atmosphere. And of course, I thought about the term atmosphere when I was writing a piece that will appear tomorrow, I think, and Wednesday in the local daily newspapers about the passing of Casey Jones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Boston Garden was a relative mausoleum during the regular season, during those great years when Bill Russell led the Celtics to 11 titles in 13 years between 57 and 69. And one of the key players on those teams, many of those teams, was Casey Jones, who just passed away at the age of 88. Then Casey comes back as the coach in the mid-80s, and the old Boston Garden, the same building, is an absolute house of bedlam almost every night. The place rocked and rolled every night because it was Larry Bird era, and the fans had just woken up to the Celtics like never before, and the atmosphere in that place every night, guys, was just electric, no matter who they were playing, particularly in the playoffs. And I give, you know, Casey Jones was just the coach those days. He never tried to take any extra credit, but I thought about that when I was writing this tribute to appreciation on Casey Jones today. That, my goodness, the fans didn't appreciate the Celtics in the 50s and 60s, but they sure as hell did in the 80s when Larry Bird was around.
Yeah, it's so true. I know my dad used to tell me that he and his buddies, they would take the train into Boston from Lynn, and they would buy a $2 ticket to sit up in the third balcony and get down and sit along the along courtside. He said it was unbelievable.
And you could walk up on any big night in the regular season, often for playoff games as well. You could pretty much walk up to the ticket office on game night and buy a pair of pretty good tickets. But those days are long gone. But it just reminds me a little bit about the appreciation of having those stands filled, no matter what the sport. And God, I hope we get the fans back in some significant fashion in 2021.
Amen to that.
Hey, I have to jump back to golf for a minute because I think one of the real sad stories that's come out this last week is in the aftermath of the PNC Open is Greg Norman, after playing with his son in the tournament, came down with a really bad case of COVID, which he's still hospitalized. And I'm just reading his Instagram, Facebook post that's on the golf website, and it's just kicked the crap out of him. And he's given a description, and it's like, God, it scares you to watch what he's going through.
Well, you know, we're all still living with that right now, and I have a niece who came down with it just the other day, and she's home, thankfully, but she's still quite sick, and she'll hopefully pull through, but. You know, there's been thankfully very little COVID-19 while we're trying to watch the NFL and the NBA and college football's had some problems. But as we've always talked before, guys, it's all about the almighty dollar. That's why they're playing these games
Oh, yeah.
It may be in a more sensible atmosphere. They would say, we're not going to take any chances, but when the money is so huge, when they can give someone like Jason Tatum after three years a five-year, $195 million contract, it's all about TV guys and getting these games played come hell or high water.
That says a lot about our society and culture today, Gary. I've become a big soccer fan over the last 20 years. And there was actually a match that was supposed to be played this afternoon that got canceled about an hour and a half before it was scheduled to go on because of the number of cases that had been detected amongst the team.
Not surprised, and of course, historians 25, 50 years from now may look back upon how Americans in particular conducted themselves during this horrible pandemic and say, what were they thinking to play those games, to risk all those people's lives, and look at how many people are dying anyways. And, you know, we know that the Americans are very spoiled. Very spoiled population. They want their lollipops every day, no matter what, whether they're going to the dentist or not. And in this case, they're defying, you know, this deadly situation we're dealing with, and it's getting more and more serious by the day here. And as we're about to turn into the new year, it's just that it's all about the glorious, all about the dollar.
It is.
All right, guys. Let's look forward to. And you say tribute to KC will be out this week, Gary?
Yeah, you should see it on the online tomorrow, and it should be in the Gloucester New Report and Salem Papers Wednesday. Because
okay.
We had the great fortune, Mike Grenier and I, to cover that team for Casey's 5 years as the coach. We love watching Casey when Mike and I were growing up as fans. And Casey made a tremendous contribution to the Celtics history, accepting his role, his secondary role as a backup guard, then as a quarterback replacing the point guard, I should say, replacing Bob Cousy when he retired. Then he comes back, you know, 20 years later, and accepts a very secondary role as the head coach of a team that went to the finals 4 of the 5 years he was there. And I make a note, Rick, in my piece. He had some great players, yes, but I mean, there are so many great coaches out there at the basketball level, both the major college and the professional, that did great teams, and they never got either to the Final Four or to the NBA Finals. In case he got there 4 out of 5 years with the Celtics, he got there one other time coaching the Washington Capitals franchise, and he had an amazing run and an amazing part of basketball history here in Boston.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. All right, Gary, looking forward to next Monday night, too, if all is well.
All is well. Happy New Year, guys, and behave yourselves over the weekend, and stay warm and stay safe.
Right back at you, Gary. You, too. Be well. Take care.
Nice.
All right, that's Gary Larrabee, a sports historian and golf writer. We will take a break and talk some more Celtic basketball with Mike Grenier coming up in just a second. Again, this is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right. It is the fourth day of Christmas, so I want to say Merry Christmas to Mike Grenier. How are you?
Same here. I don't know if I keep track of the 12 days of Christmas, but that's a nice sentiment, so I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Hey, Rick, so what did your true love give to you today?
Well, it wasn't four calling birds, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go any further than that. Let's leave it. We'll leave it alone.
At this point, I take a successful three-pointer by the Celtics at the end of the game.
Oh, listen. I want to get to that because as I was talking with Tim, I don't know why they didn't go inside, though. I just don't know why they didn't go inside, but that's another story. The Celtics are one shot away from being two wins and one loss, but they're also one shot away from being zero wins and three losses.
Correct.
So we'll get to that. But
they could be 0-3 because obviously the shot that Tatum made to meet the Milwaukee Bucks, was a wild shot. That was a low percentage. Tim, that was a low percentage shot, wasn't it? I mean, like wild, over Giannis.
I was, and I went, he's got no chance of going in. It's so far off, and all of a sudden it just kisses him.
But when you're as cool as he is, it's like, yeah, I meant to do that.
Yep. Oh, no. It's what Paul Pierce said.
Yeah.
I didn't think three. I thought win.
There you go. All right, listen, we'll get back to that. But first, I want to, you just heard Gary Larrabee bring up KC Jones.
Yeah.
And I read that I guess only Sam Jones has more wins or more championships. But I remember watching KC. I always thought of KC as the defensive guy and Sam Jones as the offensive guy out front. But more than that, I want to ask you about the relationship you may have, or his humanity, his humanness, because I remember watching, I think it was Don Gillis, it might have been Mike Lynch, he does go back that far, interviewing KC night after night. And he seemed like such a gentleman. I mean, obviously incredibly competitive, but a gentleman.
No question. And, yes, like Gary mentioned, we saw him play on TV when we were young guys, teenagers, and then who would have thought, a few years later that we'd be seeing KC, in the locker room as the coach of the Celtics, So it's an amazing, but to kind of give you perspective on KC Jones, I want to go back to 1983 season when Bill Fitch was the coach, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everyone, I was in Milwaukee, covering, and Larrabee was on the staff, and Bill Kaporos was the sports editor, and I covered the Milwaukee Bucks-Celtics playoff series, which they got swept 4-0. And it was a toxic atmosphere. Fitch was a great coach who brought him a championship, However, he grated on people because he was Mr. Blunt, he was really an aggressive coach who got in your face as a player. And the players eventually tuned him out. And I can remember distinctly from my press row seat in Milwaukee on game four, players didn't even want to go into the timeout and listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
They were so fed up with him. And sure enough, like 2 or 3 weeks later, I remember seeing the big headline, Bill Fitch fired. And so I think the next coach was going to have to be a calming influence. And that's where they chose KC Jones. And that's exactly what they got in 1984. And as you know, that was one of their great teams. They beat the Lakers in the finals, and they were back on top again. And, of course, KC provided that calmness throughout the next 5 or 6 years. The players could relate to him because KC was a great player of his own, but he had a totally different approach than the in-your-face aggressive attitude of Bill Fitch. And both approaches can work. However, Fitch outlived his usefulness in the sense of penetrating the players' minds, and they didn't want to listen to him anymore. Whereas KC had a much more congenial approach, and he could be tough when he needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
However, he was the perfect man to guide those phenomenal Celtics teams in the 1980s.
Yeah, I think...
Right, but,
go ahead, Tim.
Is it that there were so many dominant personalities on those Celtics teams that he coached? The plays were of such skill and magnitude that they didn't need a Bill Fitch riding them.
Yep.
Their understanding of the game was such, and the understanding of the role and of the offense, it was kind of like, we always say you get a really good team, you throw the ball out of the court and let them play.
Right. Like, you're right. He didn't exactly do that. He had more impact than that, but you're absolutely right. Bill Fitch was better off. Remember, he coached the Cleveland Cavaliers in the bad old days. He was great for young players who needed that discipline, who needed to learn the discipline and the lifestyle of the NBA, and that it wasn't all just, hang around nightclubs.
Fitch wanted guys to improve every single day. When he had a veteran team that had Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish and that whole group, Scott Wedman, all those guys, they had been around the league, and they didn't need an in-your-face, aggressive personality. And that's where Casey Jones came in. He had some good assistant coaches around him as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was a perfect marriage of players at that particular age, Larry Bird's age, and Casey Jones's, I don't want to call it laid-back attitude, but sort of like a calmer attitude than Bill Fitch had. And obviously it paid off. They won championships in 84 and 86. And you know, he was also a guy who, in talking to the media, he didn't care if you were from the New York Times or the Salem News. Like, in other words, he would give you the time to do your interviews and conduct your player interviews and all that. And he didn't play favorites. Like, I know, having dealt with so many professional coaches over the years, some guys play favorites. They'll only talk to the bigger newspapers or magazines, Sports Illustrated, whatever the case may be. Casey Jones was not that way. You know, he didn't care if you were from the New Report paper or the Washington Post. You know what I mean? So he was great in that respect. A lot of dignity. He was just a really good person who just was perfect for the situation that the Celtics were in. And it resulted, obviously, in many, many wins. They could have won really four in a row. It was so good, as you know, Tim. They won in 84. They lost to the Lakers in 85, tight series. Won it in 86. Could have beaten the Lakers in 87. So he could have won four in a row with a little bounce of the ball here or there. So, yeah, his legacy is definitely cemented in the heads of Celtics fans in terms of his impact throughout the many years he played.
You know, how much did Chris Ford and Jimmy Rogers benefit by working with KC as assistant coaches?
Oh, tremendously. Chris Ford, of course, we knew him personally in a big way, because his son, Chris Ford Jr., played at St. John's Prep. And Chris and his wife would show up at St. John's Prep gym. And, yeah, Chris Ford had that type of personality that he fed off the things he learned from Casey Jones. And Jimmy Rogers was the same way. They're two of the nicest people that we ever dealt with in the media. And they were effective with the players as well. You know, it's funny, Larry Bird, of course, being a hard-nosed guy, he loved Bill Fitch. He loved the hard-nosed approach. But, again, I saw a quote from Bird over the weekend a couple days ago where he said something about Casey Jones being, like, maybe the nicest person he ever met. Matter of fact, he had a quote that Casey Jones had the kind of personality that I wish I had, except that I don't have the time to work on it. What a great quote from Larry Bird. You know, so, but Bird could have played for anybody. He was, like, unique in that respect. He could play for a hard-nosed guy or a soft-spoken guy.
Mike, you mentioned dignity, and I'm going to go back here for a second because I do want to get into this year's edition. But when I think of Casey Jones and Sam Jones and Satch Sanders and Bill Russell and those guys, John Havlicek, Bob Cousy, dignity just comes to mind. I mean, they were gentlemen. They were classy, incredibly competitive. But it just doesn't seem to have that same culture now in basketball, if you know what I'm trying to say. And Casey carried that on as a coach as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You hit the nail on the heck there, hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, all those guys. Tommy Heinsohn would be another one that's included in that batch of guys.
Bill Sharman and you can keep going. All those
tremendous
guys.
Tremendous guy. Oh, Bill Sharman, tremendous person. Yeah, I mean, Red Auerbach obviously cultivated that type of atmosphere and let those guys grow. And, you know, Red Auerbach, in the days long before there was analytics and scouting people all over the world, he had to rely on his network of coaching friends in the college ranks. And he drafted good people, not just good players. So, and of course, that tradition carried on for many, many years, you know. So yeah, that's Casey Jones, man, he deserves all the legacy accolades he can get because he was a big part of, you know, many of the 17 championships they've had, you know.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Now let's get down to, I texted you the other night, hoping I didn't wake you up, but I'm sure you were still up. I said, great win. And I felt I was exhilarated. And then they got crushed by Brooklyn. And then last night was a competitive game. So what's going on? What's your assessment first three games?
I think we're seeing, you know, we're seeing obviously Kemba Walker not being there. Jeff Teague had one or two good games, but he's only shooting 27%. Now, it's a small sample size. But Jeff Teague's a 12-year veteran. He's only shooting 26%, okay? Here's another point, Rick. I'd like to get Tim's impact and yours, too, on this. I've maintained that since the teams went into the bubble the previous season, that Jaylen Brown has actually been a better player than Jason Tatum. And the reason I say that is that they can't play Jaylen Brown strictly for the three-point shot. He adapts to the game situations. He'll take the ball to the basket. He'll take the intermediate range shot, the one that Gordon Hayward used to take. And by the way, Gordon Hayward has had two 28-point games already in Charlotte. Two 28-point games. And whereas Tatum, he wants to be great, but he hasn't learned the total picture on how to be great. Now, I think if Larry Bird had been in that situation last night with 5 or 6 seconds left after a timeout, he would have seen him driving to the basket, and he is not such a hungo. He didn't want to play hero ball where he would necessarily take the final shot.
Right.
If Robert Parrish was cutting over, or Dennis, they would have got the winning type shot. But during a timeout last night, I actually said to my wife, you don't even need a timeout. I know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Tatum's going to get the ball. He's going to wiggle a couple times and take a 24-footer. And that's exactly what it did. It was a terrible shot. And I do like the fact that he owned it after the game. He said, that was a poor shot selection on my part. That's on me. So he realizes it. But if he drives to the basket, we know he's good enough to draw two or three defenders, which will leave somebody open for a very easy shot.
One thing that disturbed me, if I can interrupt, Mike, was the standing around that I saw in the fourth quarter in particular. The Celtics did not move.
Yeah, that happens to them occasionally because the focal point becomes a lot of times Tatum in the fourth quarter and they're behind. And this was like, they were behind by 10 or 11 points in the third quarter. So they look for Tatum to give them a quick bundle of points. But they don't need to do that because Jaylen Brown is very athletic. Robert Williams gave the Celtics some really good
points
last night.
Yes.
It's kind of like a good and bad thing because he made that great steal that led to a basket, the go-ahead basket by Marcus Smart. But then the Pacers called a timeout, and he was burned badly on a pick-and-roll play by Sabonis, who scored what turned out to be the winning basket. So you're going to get the ups and downs with a guy like that. But what I'm saying is that Tatum does not need to take it all on his shoulders and end up taking 23, 24-foot jumpers at the end of the game. He can drive to the basket. He's only taken 4 free throws. Tim, that's a telling stat. 3 games, he's only been to the foul line 4 times. And he had 0 free throws in his first 2 games. So that tells you he's not forcing things, take it to the basket. Star players will get star calls from the officials. Tatum is not doing that so far.
Yeah, it certainly, this league has become so dependent upon the 3-point shot. And some guys just see themselves as three-point artists, and it's become such a part of the flow of the game that the inside game has become forgotten. And with the lack of a solid number of really offensively capable big men who have a developed game around the post, unfortunately never going to see it again. But Tim Duncan is the last you'll probably ever see. A guy who could play around the post, soft little bank shot, soft little turnaround, easy game inside that sucks defenses in that allows you to have a bit more freedom on the outside. And that's where, San Antonio I had all that great success is because Duncan was just so consistent as a dominant inside big man. But now there's nobody like that. Even now, he just wants to, he'll drive to the hoop. But he doesn't have an inside game as such.
Right, exactly. Well, we are seeing, though, Tim, Tristan Thompson does not have an outside game. So we are seeing him. He's a better player than Enes Kanter, who they had a year ago, who couldn't play defense at all. Tristan Thompson hangs around the inside. He can make that offensive rebound, little hook shots, or if you dump the ball inside, he's got some clever veteran moves, and he can score. He can get you those 10, 12 points and 8 or 9 rebounds. That's fine. That's perfect. But you saw Miles Turner last night, a young center. He's like 7'11". He's taking 3-pointers and that's, I hate seeing that, but that's the way the NBA has gone. That's the way the game has gone. But we should mention the Celtics rookie, Pritchett, the guy from Oregon. He's shooting 71% through the team's first 3 games, like 64% on threes. He had like 13 points last night. 15. He looks good. He's playing ahead of the kid who was drafted ahead of him on the Celtics, Aaron Nesmith, who's barely played at all. The kid Pritchard is playing tremendous so far, right, guys?
Oh.
Well, I think, you know, he's a kid who understands his role, and he's playing within himself. He's not trying to play outside himself. He's not trying to force his game. He understands what his game is, and he's accepted his role, and he's trying to blend that into the flow of the game, into the flow of the offense. And I think if some of these other guys start to do the same thing, I think they find the overall success would increase.
Yeah, and I think the thing we should remember about the kid from Oregon, too, is he had 4 full years of college ball. You rarely see that in the NBA these days. So he's kind of a more mature rookie than like 95% of the guys you see. So you're right, he's accepted his role. He's very calm on the floor. I like his game so far because teams are going to have to respect his three-point shooting ability. And he also takes it inside a couple times. He knows how to pass the ball. You know, the Celtics may have something very good on their hands here in this rookie. So we'll see what happens. But right now they're 1-2. But so, you know, it's such a small sample size. The Milwaukee Bucks, who, you know, are very talented, are also 1-2. And they got beat by the Knicks last night by like 25, 30 points. So it's so early. But the Lakers obviously are off to a heck of a start. And they look so talented. And you look at the Clippers. They lost by 50 points last night. And, you know, they have Paul George, and they have all sorts of talent, and they got absolutely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough to tell early in the season, but with the Celts right now, again, they got the Pacers again tomorrow night, again in Indianapolis, I believe. So they have a chance to come back and get themselves even and try to get on some kind of streak. But they're almost there as far as winning, but they're not quite there because, you know, you got Tatum still making mistakes that he shouldn't be making at this stage of his career.
All right, well, let's give it a week and see where we are this time next week.
That's right. That sounds good.
I appreciate it, Mike, and thank you for the insight with KC. That was great, too. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, we have to hope, guys, that this is the last we see of Cam Newton tonight, okay?
listen, excuse me. Did you see Josh McDaniels' interview yesterday or the day before?
I did not. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Somebody asked him about that, and it was so telling, guys. His response was, well, you know, everybody has an opportunity, and you have an opportunity to perform not only in games, but you also have an opportunity to show what you can do in practice in 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s. And what I was hearing was he was destroying Stidham, saying, you know, he just hasn't shown it in practice. I was astounded by that.
That could well be the case. So, obviously, Belichick's been stubborn about this and sticking to his guns, and, you know, you can't argue with his track record for the last 20 years.
Well, I tell you what, I was just talking with Tim. I'm not following Tampa Bay, but I did see that Brady had 4 more touchdown passes over the weekend. So,
yeah.
Good Lord, the Patriots need some kind of juice, you know?
Well, it's 36-5 right now in touchdown passes.
Yeah.
36 for Brady and 5
yeah.
You know, for our guy.
Yeah, but how many running touchdowns does Tom Brady?
There you go.
Brady looked as good in one half Saturday, Tim, throwing for 347 yards, I think it was, in one half.
Yep.
He looked as good as virtually any game that he had in a New England uniform.
Oh, God, yes. Yes.
It was crazy.
It was nuts. Yeah.
The arm strength was there. The accuracy was there. The zip on the ball, the velocity.
It's scary how good he still is. That's freaky.
It was astounding.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's call it a night.
All right. Thank you.
Mike, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
See you, Mike. Happy New Year.
You too.
Happy New Year. All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports writer, sports writer emeritus for the Salem News, and great talking with him and getting the insight as we always get from Mike and Gary and so many of the sports writers that we're able to talk with. Coach, I guess that's it. So, any plans for New Year's Eve?
No, we're staying home and doing sushi.
All right. My wife wants Chinese, and so I'm gonna probably get up around 5 a.m. and get in line, and then maybe by 5 p.m. I'll be able to pick up the food. So that's what,
yeah, I know.
That's what we'll do.
Well, early and often. Otherwise, you're not going to eat till at least January 3rd.
Yeah, I know. Well, Tim, it's you know, let me see. Next Monday night will be 2021. So it's quite an interesting year, but we made it, and let's make sure we keep making it.
I can do that.
Good.
I'll see you then, Rick.
All right, Coach. Thanks a lot. Take care. Happy New Year.
See you, everybody.
Yep. That's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill here at MSO News Sports, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate what he's done over the years and how much fun we've had doing this, and we do it basically for fun. That's what we're doing. All right, we got to get out of here. Happy New Year to everybody. Please do the right thing. Stay safe. Be well. And let's believe that 2021 is going to be a great year, health-wise and otherwise as well. All right? This is MSO News Sports on behalf of Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. Be safe. Happy New Year.